introspective, inward-looking, self-examining, characterized by or given to introspection.
Welcome to the Introspective Podcast, your compass for internalizing the path towards optimal lifestyle design, business success, and mindful entrepreneurship with your host, Jake Anderson.
What is up? Welcome back, my introspective listeners. It is another daily deep dive here on the podcast. And today's a cool episode. We talk about startups and specifically in the tech space, which my little nerdy heart just goes wild over topics like this. I love talking about startups and tech and just like things that can advance the human race, right? You know, what can we do to really revolutionize? And technology has just been on such a fast track. The exponential growth with technology has been unreal. And the guest today is definitely somebody who lives in that world. I mean, he is somebody who has worked on projects that have been acquired by companies like Apple and Equifax. He has done things, you know, he's really doing some big things, especially, in the app world. And this person I'm speaking of, his name is Lamit Patel. And I have to first apologize because I am the worst, which is kind of not good when you're a podcastist, but I am the worst when it comes to pronunciating names. I think it's my Appalachian, you know, twang, kind of growing up in the mountains. I'm not making excuses for myself, but I am the worst at pronouncing names. And so when the podcast kicks in, it's actually, you hear me saying Lamit. It's Lamit Patel is his name, and he is the vice president of growth at IMVU. Prior to IMVU, Lamit managed growth at early stage startups, including Roku, Trusted ID, Texture, and Earthlink. Lamit is a public speaker, author, advisor, and recognized as a mobile hero by Liftoff. Lamit's new best-selling book, Lean AI, is part of the Eric Ries, the Lean Startup Series, which is now available on Amazon to purchase. And I highly recommend, first off, I'll talk about, you know, the Lean Startup, because that is a book I highly recommend any entrepreneur read. And it's an incredible book. I personally have read it. It will save you a lot of money and time and headache when it comes to starting a business. And Lamit's book, Lean AI, certainly is a very close sister to that. So I would recommend, you know, checking out both books, because they give you, and I haven't personally read Lean AI, but after speaking with Lamit and really learning more about the kind of, things that he talks about in the book, is definitely something I'm going to want to pick up, and something I recommend that you pick up, because it falls in line with this whole lean startup idea and what that really means, and kind of unpacking that a little bit to a place where, you know, like it's like answering the question, like, how much time and resource should I put into it now? Right. And we get really caught up into the scope creep. And, you know, I think our ego in a lot of times just kind of gets in the way, and we end up going way, way above and beyond what we should in the earlier stages, and not considering things like customer feedback and really evolving our products and services. Well, specifically our products, because this is definitely more applicable, I think, to products and services, but, you know, services apply to, but specifically whatever it is that we're doing, how we're evolving it, making sure that our customers are part of that process. That's the big thing. Like, you can't do this in a vacuum. You got to have your customers part of the process. And that's my interpretation of, you know, when I think of the lean startup, and they've got methodologies and frameworks and stuff that they really, you know, Eric talks on specifically, and I'm sure Lamit has some incredible frameworks as well in his book. So definitely check those out, and, you know, tune into this interview, because I think you're going to find it to be very interesting hearing Lamit's story. He definitely has, he's got a pretty interesting story too, kind of that almost rags to riches type story, you know, kind of metaphorically speaking there, you know, the whole, like, I was, you know, at a very low place, ended up breaking through. We get to hear that as well on this episode. So tune in. Thank you for being here. And without further ado, I welcome to the show Lamit Patel.
All right, welcome everybody back to another episode of Introspective. Got that a little backwards there, but we are back in action for another interview. And today I have the pleasure of having special guest Lumit Patel on the show. Lumit, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jake. Excited to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, I am too. And before we hopped on the interview, I feel like the universe is kind of like aligning for this interview, because I know technology and AI and apps and being in that world is such a big part of who you are and what you do. And it was just so to speak, with my journey, I actually submitted for my first app project this morning. And I thought, wow, how convenient is that? I get to speak to somebody who is just amazing in that world of technology. And also it completely like lines up with something that I just started as a new part of my journey. So I want to kick off with that, because I think that a lot of people, I know a lot of my listeners, I'm very intentional about learning my audience. And I know a lot of the people listening to this show, they're kind of in that startup phase. They're in that startup to maybe they got a little bit of traction in their business, but it's still very much so a new process for them. So I want to ask you about startups and entrepreneurship. And it doesn't have to necessarily go into technology, but just the general concept of getting started as an entrepreneur. Would you mind sharing, like, what was your start as an entrepreneur, and what's some advice that you would have to that startup entrepreneur as they're getting started?
Yeah. So what I would say, you know, I've been fortunate to work at a number of different startups with many sort of smart entrepreneurs, founders and co-founders. And generally, you know, the thing that really motivates them to really start the business in the first place is trying to sort of solve a problem that they generally have faced personally and haven't been able to find a solution to it. And so, you know, that's generally has been kind of a good driver, at least with the startups that I've been part of that have ended up doing well. It's when it's personal to you, you're more likely to kind of go through and try to figure out a way versus trying to, you know, sort of take on somebody else's problem that may not be completely, you know, something that you might be able to relate to. Mm-hmm. But what I would say, you know, the most important part about being an entrepreneur, it's a wild ride. There's no linear path that, you know, that if you follow and do exactly what people like, let's say, Elon Musk did, or people like Steve Jobs have done, that you're going to be able to get to the same outcome or the same destination. Because, mm-hmm. you know, but what it comes down to is that you just have to be really persistent. You just have to continue to try and figure out, you know, what's the right direction that you want to take once you get on the ride, so to speak. And I think the key part of being an entrepreneur is being more focused on trying to get to the next part of that journey versus trying to focus right on the end, because the journey is going to go through a number of turns and twists. And, you know, ultimately the key part of an entrepreneur is developing a product or a service that's going to have product market fit, which is where, you know, users mm-hmm. are actually going to value that. And to be honest, you're not going to get to that right away. So you just have to be agile and flexible in terms of, you know, trying to put something out there, which is what the whole lean startup methodology is about. It's about test, learn, and iterate. Keep putting something out there, keep getting some real user feedback, and then validate whether it's working or not, and continue to make changes along the way. And so, you know, to sum it up, it's all about looking for directional data to help you versus looking for perfection.
Yeah. And there's a couple things that you've said that I wanted to highlight. And the first thing is kind of where things tend to start. And I know I've been through this process, and I've had a lot of conversations with others who've been through this too. It's like, there's the question, or not the question, but the statement of, I want to be an entrepreneur. Like, I want to, you know, feel like I'm in control of my own destiny, and I've got the freedom and all the sexiness that goes with that word. and they kind of sit around and they think about like, what's the business? And one of the things that I want to highlight about what you said in your response that I think is really important is that a lot of great ideas tend to start with like something that people are personally having some frustrations with. Like it's like you're sitting around and you're like, you know what, like this just seems there's a better way of doing what I'm doing right now. And I know there's a better way and it's irritating me. And then you start having conversations, you put together a little solution. And I think that's the lean startup, philosophy is like put together something, introduce it, and then get some feedback and get some direction, then make some adjustments, and then you just keep growing. But oftentimes I think people get, maybe it's an ego thing, ego from the standpoint of it's just how the ego works, is they get so caught up on the perfection of it all. And that it's got to be this like super amazing design and it's got to look like the final product. But like, I mean, tell me about that a little bit. Cause I know you worked on a lot of startups, you know, with Roku and which is amazing. And some of these other Trusted ID and Texture and Earthlink, like tell me about, you know, when you got started on those projects, what was the mindset, you know, and what was like, maybe there's like a behind the curtain, like what was happening behind the curtain there that made it so successful?
Yeah. So what I would say there's a couple of things that generally goes into startups that end up becoming successful. But I think one is really just about trusting the process. And the process is really trying to figure out, what does the customer really want at the end of the day? You know, being really obsessed about the customer. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think one of the misconceptions about being an entrepreneur, maybe people might have, is that it's a really glamorous and, lifestyle, and, you know, people are getting super rich and all that stuff. The truth is, the number of startups that end up becoming successful are less than 5%. You know, there's mm-hmm. a 95% failure rate. And generally, the ones that end up becoming really successful are really obsessed about focusing on the customer. So it's all about really, you know, really sort of creating something and continuing to get feedback on what the customer really wants and whether they value that, and continuing to make changes and pivots along the way on how the product evolves. And then the other part of that is to make sure that you don't run out of money, right? Because, you know, you need to have in startups, they call it runway, but the idea is you got to have enough money to be able to get to that next stage of growth that you want to get to. So, you know, so the key thing for any entrepreneur is to really be focused on your customer, continue to be data driven. So when you focus on data versus intuition, then it's less about egos or opinions, and it's more about what the user is really telling you. And then the third part is once you do get to product market fit, that's just like the entry point of building the business. But the next stage from there is really, how do you acquire customers? How do you retain customers? And how do you ultimately monetize customers? So, you know, finding a really good balance of creating a growth engine on how you're going to continue to get customers for that product, how you're going to be able to keep those customers happy so they continue to stick around and use the product, and then figure out how you're going to be able to make money out of those customers. And generally, you know, people try to get those things in the wrong order, where as soon as they get a product out, they start thinking about how are we going to make as much profit as possible. And that's the mindset that gets a lot of companies in trouble, especially technology companies, because with technology, everything is kind of a new concept, right? You need to get mm-hmm. people to adapt to that initially. And so part of it is really creating awareness and driving adoption and it's educating users on how this is better and different than whatever is currently available. And so part of that is going to involve having to make some investments up front to be able to get to that stage where you get the early adopters ultimately to become really happy and loving the product. So they end up becoming your evangelists and loyal and influencers that go and start creating that word of mouth by telling their friends and family about the product and service. And that ultimately creates that whole virality and referrals and word of mouth. That's a lot. So any successful startup, for the most part, is really built on a product where that people love and you can use your customers to really become at least your initial growth engine to try and, you know, bring in other users to try and, you know, use the product for you.
It reminds me of the movie The Social Network about Facebook. And I remember, because I remember there was a part in that movie where I can't remember who it was, but somebody was saying, oh, well, you know, how are we going to make money with this? And we need to run ads. We need to run ads. And Mark Zuckerberg was like, no, because ads aren't cool. Like, and at the time they didn't really understand how to make it work with the platform, but he was just so obsessed with just like keeping it something that was cool and making it fun. And like you said, just getting the awareness out there of what it is and to really improve it, and not so much focusing on how can I make money on this right now. And, you know, that will come later. And I think especially with, you know, I've had this conversation before too, especially with these apps and technology, you know, the more people, like, attention is value, you know, there's value in attention. If you get a lot of people who are on your app, and maybe it's not monetized, or maybe there's no revenue stream coming from it, but if you get a lot of eyeballs and a lot of people who are focusing their attention on a particular piece of technology day in and day out, that's worth something to somebody. So I want to ask you, like, you're the vice president of growth at IMVU, and a lot of what you're talking about really applies to growth. And would you mind sharing a little bit more about what you do at IMVU? And just how that applies to your current mission.
Yeah, so I'll start off by just telling people a little bit about IMVU if they don't know. But IMVU is actually the world's largest avatar-based social networking app. So it's primarily a role-playing game where people come and create an avatar. And then with that avatar, they're able to make a lot of, like, connections and friendships with people from around the world and have fun creating these different, like, virtual shared experiences. So it's lack of a better word, it's a great way to kind of escape into a virtual reality world. Wow. where you can have a lot of fun. And my role there as head of growth is primarily three things that I'm responsible for and the teams that I manage. One is around user acquisition, which is about how do we continue to acquire new customers so that the business can continue to grow. And that encompasses, you know, many different areas from, like primarily where do we spend all of our user acquisition budget, which is primarily advertising. So where do we want to advertise to continue to, for example, whether it's on Facebook, Google, or TV, podcast, or whatever, but those are decisions that my team makes in terms of, you know, where we're going to focus on getting user attention to acquire these users coming in. And then the second part is retention. So once we bring these customers in, how do we continue to provide value for them so that they continue to stay around on the product? And that involves doing a lot of, like, customer email campaigns, lifecycle management. But the key is really about getting customers engaged in the product as quickly as possible. And then the third part of my role is around monetization, which is ultimately how do we make money and revenue to grow the business. And primarily for us, you know, with our business model, there's a couple of different ways that we make money. One is around where people, we actually have the world's largest virtual goods store, where we have over about 50 million different items. So people potentially come create avatars, and they customize the look and feel of the avatars and customize the look and feel of these different virtual worlds that they make. Yeah. So one part of our revenue comes from people purchasing these currency that we have in a game called MBU credits, and then they use those credits to buy all these virtual stuff. And so that a lot of that is in-app purchases. The second part of how we make money is through advertising. So, you know, there's generally people that may not have the ability to purchase these credits. So we give them the ability to earn those credits by interacting with different advertising offers, whether it requires watching a video or taking surveys. But, you know, for different advertisers, when they complete those tasks, then then they can earn credits. That's another part. And then the third part of that, of how we make money, that's really getting popular, is subscriptions. So we've created these different subscription offerings to, and you know, one example of that is something that we call VIP subscription. So so we've created users in the platform that can buy this VIP subscription, which gives them a new form of status within the game, and it gives them a set number of different credits that they can use every month to purchase, as well as become a creator. So what people don't realize on MVU, just like YouTube and a lot of these other platforms or social networks, there's a lot of creators on those platforms who like to create things. And so we're like a marketplace where we connect a lot of creators who create these virtual stuff to consumers that are coming on the platform that are buying this stuff. And so we're a two-sided marketplace from that standpoint as well.
So is the marketplace, the things that are selling, are these virtual goods and service, or is there services? Is it something like I could go and buy something that's physical that gets shipped to my house, or what type of products are we talking about?
It's all virtual right now. Okay. Yeah, everything's virtual, but it's huge. People don't realize, but there's, I mean, a lot of our customers are millennials, and you know, they love spending a lot of time in the MVU app. And really get integrated, because once you start making friends, then you want to sort of, you know, escape to, let's say, a private island, or you want to, you know, go watch a concert. And, and you know, there's a lot of these sort of, you know, virtual events and everything that take place in the game. So it's a very social game.
Yeah, I have to check that. Is it something you get on the App Store, or?
Yeah, so okay. We're available on mobile and desktop. But you can find it on Android and in iOS, where we're actually one of the top three. Generally, we rank within the top 3 to 5 of the most highest grossing social apps in the app stores.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I would think now, especially with, you know, the current state of the world and the pandemic and how people have kind of went to isolation. I mean, have you seen any, what kind of reaction from that have you seen to your business or response?
Yeah. So, you know, we were growing pretty aggressively prior to the pandemic, but the pandemic has really just accelerated that growth and put a lot more fire into how rapidly we've grown since the pandemic. And so, you know, I mean, there's a number of businesses that have done pretty well during the pandemic, but primarily it's because, you know, there's more people that are spending time on digital devices now. And so, you know, for us, you know, we've definitely seen a huge surge of growth coming since the pandemic has hit. And, you know, because our app, you know, provides a way for people to spend time, you know, when they you know, to kind of escape whatever they're doing at home, and just like, you know, people are gravitating towards like movie apps or news apps or music, but it's about kind of getting your mind off whatever's going on right now. So yeah, we've continued to grow. And, you know, what we've actually done is, you know, we've continued to invest a lot more into the business since the pandemic. And, you know, I know there's been, unfortunately, there's been a lot of people that have lost jobs, but, you know, certain sectors of the technology world have definitely done well. And we're one of those where we've actually been hiring a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, we continue to have a lot of positions open because, you know, because the demand has continued to grow for what we have out there.
So let's talk about growth and more specifically with your book. I'm sorry, I want to talk about your book and how it applies to growth, because I was looking into Lean AI, and I want to give you the stage here to talk about this. But you talk about artificial intelligence and how that can help, I guess, augment the growth of your business systems and things to that nature. Would you mind sharing about your book and kind of even touching on that point a little bit? Because I think that's really interesting for anybody who's in that like accelerated growth phase. You know, what are the tools that you could use to really help augment that and make it more sustainable?
Yeah. So, you know, the book that I wrote is called Lean AI, and it's part of the Eric Ries Lean Startup series. And it's available on Amazon and most of the other like online bookstores. Mm-hmm. And the main premise of the book was to really share with a lot of entrepreneurs and other startups that, you know, once you have a product, you know, the key thing you have to focus on is how do you acquire customers? How do you retain customers and how do you monetize, which is the whole area of growth. And, you know, the key component that really comes down to how well you can do that is your customer data, because that ends up becoming your superpower for growth. Mm. And a lot of entrepreneurs, and startups generally have tried to sort of hire a lot of people to try and, you know, process that data and try to make some meaning out of what the data is doing and then take decisions. But now in this day and age with artificial intelligence, you don't have to hire a lot of people to be able to execute on driving growth. You can really automate a lot of those processes by leveraging artificial intelligence. And there's a lot of platforms out there, because, you know, most people are going to be spending a lot of their budgets on digital channels, and now, you know, with these digital channels, you can potentially just automate a lot of the processes on how to manage those campaigns across these different channels, whether it's Google, Facebook, or anything else out there. But it all sort of stems from having the right data to make those decisions. And so the book really just talks about the whole premise around Lean Startup is about test, learn, and iterate. But doing that using artificial intelligence enables you to create that whole velocity of learning at a much faster rate. And, gotcha. You know, it's, you know, what we've done at MVU is pretty amazing, because, you know, in the last 4 years, you know, as a business, we've been around, as we started off as a desktop app for about 15 years, and we went into mobile about 4 years ago. But the growth we've seen on mobile at the pace that we've grown, we wouldn't have been able to do that without without leveraging artificial intelligence to really enable us to make these smart decisions around all of the components around growth. And so what I want to, you know, what I found when I was talking about this at different conferences, that a lot of companies still don't think about it this way and still try to do it the old way. So, the key thing now moving forward is really leverage AI and try to automate as much of the tasks and processes, so you reduce a lot of human error. And, you know, a good example is that, you know, most people are using mobile at different times of the day, you know, depending on, you know, some people are going to be on there in the evening, some people are going to be there in the morning, some people could be there, you know, in the afternoons. But instead of trying to be dependent on trying to sort of manually change the dials on when you want to increase spend here or decrease spend here, or try this creative or that creative, and moving things around, you could just get a machine to do all of that work now. And it has a profound impact, because, you know, you ultimately end up getting to this thing that a lot of people talk about, which is personalization, but you're able to do it in real time. You're able to target the right customer at the right time and the right message that's going to enable them to take the action that you want, which is to, you know, download your app. And then once they get into the app, you're able to customize and personalize the whole onboarding experience that they get that gets them better engaged. And then you're able to predict, because ultimately AI is helping you predict, you know, the next action, predict out, you know, who's your best life, who's going to be your best customer, what's the right experience to give that customer, and, you know, what's the right way you're going to monetize that customer. As I mentioned, at Enview, we have three different ways to monetize customers, but we're able to predict out based on what the user's doing within the first 48 hours, what's the best experience to monetize them. And so then we start giving them that personal experience. And that's really enabled us to grow over 50% consistently year over year for the past 4 years.
Wow. Yeah. And so AI is there to, I mean, yeah, obviously automating a lot of the kind of menial tasks, ridding that human error that can potentially start hurting things in the operation. But really the one thing that you had mentioned, and I've been aware of this just being in the online space for a couple of years now, really intently looking at it, but the thing that you talked about was how AI can help you learn and learn customer behavior. So my next question for you is about just human psychology, because and there was that show, The Social Dilemma, where they were talking about how they got teams of psychologists that focus on, you know, behavior and ways to create, I guess, that addictive nature to certain apps. Like, do you see, like, where does human psychology, like, how has that played into this whole equation here of what you're doing? And what are some of the considerations that you look for in that regard?
Yeah, what I would say is, you know, a big part of what I do and my teams do is really understanding human psychology, because ultimately it's all about trying to understand human behavior and predict out what's the right way to interact with that user to get them to influence them taking the desired outcome that you're optimizing towards. And so for us, you know, ultimately we're optimizing towards, you know, bringing in the right user and trying to predict out, you know, based on where this user is coming from. We look at a lot of data historically based on other users that come from, you know, that sort of match a similar profile of who that user is, and what were the actions and behaviors that the previous users do that ended up resulting in them becoming, you know, one of our best customers. And we try to predict that out. For example, you know, Jake resembles a user that came, you know, before and did these actions. And so we need to try and get Jake to do these same actions too. And how do we influence Jake to take those actions? So there's a lot of psychology that goes into, you know, people don't realize, but all tech companies, it's all about influencing user behavior, because when you introduce a new product, you're trying to get people to adopt a new behavior.
Yeah.
And the key to doing that is not to try and make people take these huge shifts in changes right away. It's about giving them small, digestible changes and creating these small habits on repeatedly and daily to try and get them to sort of adopt into a new product or service. And we do the same thing too, because, you know, we know ultimately in our platform, it's, you know, it's about making friends. It's about being social in chat rooms. It's about customizing the look and feel of your avatar. But ultimately, you know, it all starts with first getting somebody to really, you know, customize the look and feel of the avatar, because that represents who they are in the virtual world. And then the next part to that is, once they have the avatar, you want to try to connect them with friends. So you start making recommendations about, you know, here's some potential friends.
Right.
And then when you connect them with friends, then you try to influence that, hey, you know, what are some good social activities that you'd want to interact in? And you want to try to get them integrated into this whole new community that we have with millions of users, because ultimately there's no point trying to give them, you know, just putting them in there and getting them to figure out what to do. You know, a lot of it is providing some indirect signposts on as guidance and, hey, try this, try that. So we call it user journeys, but every, you know, most of the companies that in technology have some form of user journey, which is all around human psychology of trying to get the user integrated into their product and for them to continue to build these repeatable and predictable habits.
Wow, that's fascinating to hear. And it really, the way you framed that, it's like technology companies are really there to kind of create new behaviors for people. And even like thinking about it, let's just take it off the technology piece for a second. As of somebody who's trying to create a new behavior or change a habit, it's like doing it in bite-sized pieces is the best way to change a habit, is to just focus on one at a time. And it seems like that's the same case when it comes to technology. So if you were to approach an app or to approach building something out, it kind of goes again back to that lean startup concept of like, keep it lean, keep it easy, keep it simple. And something that people can adopt as a new behavior and then start building more behaviors. Is that the way that you should be thinking about it as a innovator in technology?
Yeah, that's exactly the way, you know, I mean, a better way to think about it is just put yourself in the shoes of your customer. I think a big part that people miss about technology companies is outside of, influencing user behavior, it's about really understanding the customer and being empathetic to the user and the, right, and the different like pain points that you're trying to like solve for. So, and just using yourself as an example, you know, if you're going to run a marathon, you're not going to do that if somebody tells you go and run, you know, like they start off by training with running 10 miles a day. It's going to be like, you know, run half a mile a day and then go to a mile and then go to like 2 miles and then 4 miles. And that's the same thing. You know, it's like, you know, trying to make the process as simplistic as possible so that people can adopt to those new behaviors. Because if you try to make it too challenging, then people are going to give up.
Right. Yeah. And that goes with, I mean, really, it's just understanding humans, how humans work. I want to shift gears a little bit and go to, you know, kind of go back in time to a point, and I'll let you share the story here. It's something I'm familiar with. But I know that things weren't always as easy, you know, in your entrepreneurial journey, and you had a pretty massive breakthrough moment, starting out, you know, at a pretty low place, you know, in your life. And I like to kind of bring these stories up because it makes it more relatable and people understand that, you know, they might be going through some hard times themselves. And I think it gives hope and inspiration for those who are listening. So would you mind sharing that story with the listeners?
Sure. I grew up in England. So I came over to the US for grad school. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why I came out was because I was really fascinated with everything that at the time, with everything that was going on with the internet. And in England, there wasn't a lot of that was happening, but I was really fascinated. So I wanted to really come out and learn more about it. And once I graduated from grad school, I started applying for jobs just like any other, you know, graduate does. I didn't realize how hard it would be to find your first job. You know, I ended up, you know, applying to, because in those days, just like now, it's easy to apply because you can apply through the internet. So I must have applied to over like 500 different companies. I had some interviews, but ultimately I was never, you know, I wasn't able to like find a company to hire me, because one of the challenges at the time was, you know, being an international student, you need a company to sponsor you. And so, you know, that was pretty hard to try and get a company to really sponsor. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, what happened in the process, I ran out of money, and I was literally just sleeping out of my car. And I was lucky to have a friend who kind of let me, you know, sleep on a couch. And, you know, in the end, I pretty much was broke. And no, I ended up moving to Chicago because I knew somebody there who said, you know, try your luck in Chicago because it's a bigger market, you know. And so I moved to Chicago. But what I ended up doing in Chicago, because there was a company that I wanted to get into that I knew there was a lot of positions, and I applied and I kept getting rejected, was I noticed that they had a temp position open as a front desk assistant. And so I ended up taking that, ended up applying for the temp position, and I was able to get that role. And the reason why I ended up taking the temp role was because I knew that everyone in the company would has to come through the front desk, and it would give me an opportunity to try and, you know, get to know other people by networking. And I didn't really realize the power of networking at the time, but what I ended up doing working at the front desk, I got to know a lot of people, and when I wasn't working, I was really learning a lot about their different products, their culture. So I was trying to, you know, even though I wasn't a full-time employee, I still had the mindset to really get to learn as much about the products and services there. And I noticed that the role that I applied for previously opened up, and I applied for it this time, but instead of just applying for it for HR, I actually emailed the hiring manager. I didn't know him that well, but I knew him enough to have seen, you know, said hi to him a couple of times in the past. And I just told him, you know, that I was really interested in the role, and I would love it if he could maybe, you know, meet me for 10 minutes, at, you know, and to tell me a little bit more about the role, and I can tell him a little bit more about my experience and why I thought I would be a good candidate for the role. And at the time, what people didn't realize, you know, when you're an international student, you have a certain amount of time, which is like a year, and then you to find a job, or else, you know, you lose your working visa without a company sponsoring you. And so I was literally coming up to that deadline. Was like a week or so away at the time. And what happened was, you know, before I interviewed at the company where I was temping, I was able to get I was continuing to interview at other companies too. Mm-hmm. And I had an offer from another company. So it provided, you know, me some sort of safety net that I knew that I might have another company that would give me, but I really wanted to work at the company where I was. And so when I met up with the manager, I really told him what my true background was in terms of my experience, and, you know, I shared some of the ideas of how, you know, because ultimately I think with anything in life, you have to always provide value to people.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you can provide value, then, you know, that, you know, it's not about taking, it's about giving. And so, you know, when I met with him, I'd already created like a plan of what I could potentially do. And he really liked that. But I told him that I need to make a decision by the end of that week, because, you know, I have another offer. But, and this was Wednesday. And I told him, you know, having said that, I would love to work here. I would love to be part of your team. And, you know, if there's any way that you feel that I could be a good fit, you know, I'll leave it in your hands. If there's a way to move that quickly, because it's 2 days, you know, and they just put the job out at the time. I came in the next day. I didn't even know, but he had set up like 8 different interviews on Thursday. I did the interviews, and the best way to do interviews is when you don't really know you're interviewing, because then you don't get nervous about it the night before. And so by Friday, you know, I ended up getting the offer, and, you know, it felt great. But the thing that I really learned was that you just have to, you know, be entrepreneurial at any stage of your life, whether you're starting a business or, you know, you're trying to learn something or you're trying to find a job. Ultimately, you know, you just have to sort of advocate for yourself and you just have to have the ability to just step out of your comfort zone. And for me, you know, I'm generally a really shy person. So for me to actually, you know, proactively go up to someone and try to advocate for myself for a role, that for me, that took a lot of courage. But what I learned having done that and got over that fear, that's actually been a really good way for me to, you know, looking back, you know, I've been in this career for 20 years now, and a lot of my big breaks and getting to work at a lot of these like amazing companies has really come from just stepping out of my comfort zone and reaching out to people where, you know, I've really felt like, hey, this could be a good role for me, and doing the same thing that I did when I first started out.
So was Friday the last day of? It was the day that you got offered a position. Was that the last day before, was it your visa expired?
It was like the weekend before. Yeah. So,
oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. So you really just, I missed it.
But And what I would, the other thing that I would say about that is, you know, generally just coming back to human psychology, it's like, you know, it's like when your back's really against the wall, that's when generally, you know, you just have to take some action, right? I felt, you know, by then it was, I mean, my back was against the wall and I, you know, literally had nothing to lose then by just advocating for myself if I really wanted that role, you know, because most people, and this is the other thing, you know, that I sort of apply to myself, which is people can't read minds. So if you got something on your mind, tell people about it. You know, you know, if there's something that you want help on, you know, ask for it. You know, don't try to like have your ego get in the way or you know that you know. And generally what I've come to find is that people actually like to help people, you know, it makes me feel good too. I mean, I mentor a lot of people now and I like to give back and I'm sure there's a lot of people that may be starting out in a career or might be starting out on wanting to create a new business. Reach out to other entrepreneurs because, you know, I mean, I know people always want to sort of share and help and pull others along, right? Because ultimately, you know, it's not just about, you know, what you end up getting, but it's about what you end up leaving. And you know, I know that, you know, working in startups, that, you know, there's a lot of people here in San Francisco, you know, that I'm thinking that's one of the powerful things people don't realize. It's like, if you want to be in movies, you have to go to LA because that's where all the people are that work in that industry. If you want to be in startups, coming to San Francisco is great because that's where everybody is. But everybody, you know, is talking about startups, but they're also trying to help one another out too. Cause the truth is we all started somewhere and generally it was at the bottom, you know?
Yeah. I know. I always share that photo of that garage where Apple was started at, and with Steve Jobs and Wozniak, and it's just this like little rancher home in the garage. It's like this was the Apple headquarters when everything got started, and you know, and imagining where it is today versus that starting point is pretty incredible. Thank you so much for sharing that and being open just about your story. I think there's something to be said about advocating for yourself and having that courage and really too, like you position yourself to have the opportunity to take action with people by choosing that position with your internship. And it puts you in that place to get familiar with the people coming in and out. And I think that's another, you know, piece of advice to kind of take from your story is find ways to position yourself so you can be in front of the people that can help you get to that next level. So thank you for sharing that. Lumen, I want to ask you, we're getting near to the end here. Where can people find you? Where can people connect with you?
Yeah, you know, best place to connect with me, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So anybody reaches out to me, Lumen Patel, I'm happy to connect. You know, I'm always putting a lot of content out there, not only about startups, but also about, you know, personal growth and just continue to inspire and mentor other people. So definitely reach out to me on LinkedIn. I have a blog too, which is pretty much my name, LumetPatel.com. So, you know, you can get a lot of the content there that where I like to write articles around startups and AI and growth, you know, and then outside of that, I would say, you know, I'm also on Twitter, but LinkedIn and my blog are the best places to reach me. And, awesome. And yeah, if anybody has any questions, you know, feel free to reach out. You know, I'm all about wanting to give back. Because, you know, because a lot of people have done that for me along the way as well.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. And I'm certainly encouraging anybody who's listening to reach out to Lumet, go on LinkedIn, connect with you, check out your blog. I've checked out your blog. It's a very nice place to go and get some information about the things you're doing, especially I've seen some things on the technology side that's really interesting. And also your book, you can go to that website as well and order your book. Lean AI. So I'll make sure to link all that up in the show notes, just so anybody who's interested in connecting with you can go there. And in fact, would you mind just let's spell like, so the website, sometimes people don't go to the show notes. So I like to leave also a website. So it's Lumet Patel. It's LOMITPATEL.com, right? Is that correct for the website? Okay, right. Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate your time. And everybody who's listening, definitely go connect with Lumet. He's an amazing individual doing just all kinds of, you know, things and breakthrough moments with the technology space, and has a heart of gold to serve. Lumet, thank you for being on the show. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Introspective Podcast, where mindful entrepreneurs get their daily deep dive to uncover new opportunities, raise their state of awareness, and shift the introspective towards their next breakthrough moment in both life and business. And if that sounds like you, then make sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. You can find the show on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and Amazon. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow here on the Introspective Podcast.